This is the Day Zero update for October 16th, 2016. I'm Filippo DeNolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Parkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
I'm Dan Reb Victoria.
I'm Teresa Sammons.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And as you can see, we got a packed house for the show today because it is a very special episode, kind of a milestone episode, being our 100th episode of the Day Zero update.
Yes.
Yeah. When we started this about a year and a half ago, I never would have expected that we'd make it this far. So, yeah, that's pretty damn awesome.
Mm-hmm. I think I knew we were going to make it this far when we got past about the 10-episode mark. And, you know, when we started getting everybody on board, it really felt like something that was going to have some legs, I think.
Yeah. So a little later on the show, we'll be reflecting on our experiences with this and what we've done. But to start off, since we got Lee on the show, I kind of wanted to highlight a little site that I found. Because we all like a good game soundtrack, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So
true.
Yeah. So what I found here is the 16-bit audio file project. And what these guys do is they use original hardware and go so far as to modify the hardware to get direct digital output. They then record in high-quality 24-bit 96 kHz. And you get some really, really excellent sound quality out of those old consoles. So you can just go there and download Genesis soundtracks, Amiga soundtracks. They got some N64, some Saturn, some PlayStation.
Oh, this is the wrong way to start an episode for me. That means I'm just going to get more excited the entire time.
Well, they didn't have a whole ton of stuff from what I saw, but they're definitely off to a good start.
Yeah. Yeah. So some of the Amiga stuff that they got there is really good, too. I recommend you check out the Xenon 2 soundtrack for the Amiga. It's only two songs, so it's not that hard. Yeah. And they put them out in, as I said, 2496 FLAC. They do 1644 FLAC, which is CD quality, and regular old MP3, if that's what you feel like.
You know, that's exciting for me on one hand, just because I'm playing, well, obviously, you know, anything to keep this stuff in the public eye, I'm down for. But I've been playing Forza Horizon 3, and I got tired of the stations.
Yeah.
So I've been loading music. There's an app called like Xbox Simple Media Player, something like that. And you just stick a thumb drive in the Xbox and then you can just shuffle it. And so like I've been cruising around Forza Horizon, like listening to like Streets of Rage and stuff like that. So anything else I could add is awesome.
Yeah. So yeah. And just something for our listeners to check out and enjoy. They don't have the Musha soundtrack yet, which is a huge oversight, I find. So, yeah. Anyways. So I guess we'll get to what we're playing. And for me this week, not a whole heck of a lot. Rock Band Rivals is coming out this week, so I've just been playing a little bit more Rock Band 4 to get ready for that. And remembering that my fingers don't work as well as they used to, because I haven't played it in a while. So there's that. And also, I'm probably not going to be spending a whole heck of a lot of time on gaming in the foreseeable future, being that I'm going for my IT certs, so that's going to cut into my gaming time, but oh well.
Well, it'll work out, because when you're finally in IT and you're bored, you can game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Once I've got the IT certifications and the jobs, and I'm sitting in the data center not doing anything because everything's working.
Waiting for the hamster to fall out of the wheel.
Yeah. We'll just be gaming, so. It's all good in the end. So how about you, Pat?
In addition to my usual gaming, that is well documented in past episodes, the main thing I've been looking at is the job hunt, which is what happens when you have a nervous breakdown on the job and just nope the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
So I've got some leads on a couple of office positions here in town, and yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about it. This was probably the best thing I could have done for my mental health, to be completely honest, as well as it was a self-respect thing, too, in the end. But, you know, on to the next one. I'm pretty excited about both of the main leads that I'm following for jobs. And so that'll be nice. And in the meantime, I'm just enjoying having a little extra free time on my hands to get caught up on all of the gaming that I haven't been able to do with a job that kills all the energy out of me.
Yeah.
Before I can, you know, get home and use it on actually enjoying life, so.
Yeah.
That's great.
How about you, Brandon?
Yeah, so those of you who are wondering, Pat was working at Walmart. Yes. I used to work at Walmart as well. And, yeah, that place sucks the life out of you.
Here, here.
Well, I noticed there are good stores and there are bad stores.
Yeah, we both ended up at bad stores.
Which, shit, man, I was at Walmart yesterday just shopping and I wanted to kill myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I'm putting in 8 years. Now, it wasn't always a bad store, but it just kind of became one gradually over time.
And before I move on, just the thing is, one of the weird things about working at Walmart is just the really weird sort of cult of personality they have around Sam Walton.
Whereas their method, you know, the entire methodology around the corporate culture today would have Sam Walton rolling in his grave.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's, they've got pictures of him on the walls. He's in the magazine where they quote him all the time. He's on all the store awards and medals. They got inspirational quotes from him on posters in the lobby.
Yep.
You know, just Stalin would envy the type of cult of personality they built around that man.
Yeah.
But moving on. So I've been playing Guilty Gear Xrd Sign PS4 version because I don't have the money for Revelator just yet.
Yep.
And, you know, just to everybody who's wondering, after you finish the, you know, playing the arcade, you know, that story version is definitely worth watching.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And,
it seems like it's worth getting just for that, because you're basically getting a season of anime, right, in one package.
Mm-hmm. Same with Revelator.
And you see some characters return that you might not have seen in a while. And also, if you get to Revelator, you'll see some other characters you haven't seen in a while, including a certain one-eyed female swordswoman that apparently is going to be showing up soon.
That was a troll.
As a playable character.
That was a troll?
It was a Photoshop.
God damn it.
Sure, you can has the report on it.
Aww.
Yeah.
Oh, just crush our dreams, Nat. Jeez.
I'm pretty sure she's going to show up at some point. I mean, she's like my one big character in the other Smash Brothers games. I mean, the other Guilty Gear games, except, you know, that one where she was just a secret character. But whatever. So, on top of that, I've also been playing Fire Emblem Fates. I said last time that it had been such a long time that I had, you know, played it. In the story mode, I got into somewhere in the middle, and I just decided to go ahead and just start a whole new playthrough. So, you know, Fire Emblem, it's good proof that, you know, Nintendo games aren't just mindless entertainment. They are deep, and they have layers.
Yeah.
They can be complex.
Yeah.
And also found out the guy who wrote the scenario Ario for Fire Emblem Fates is the same guy who wrote Get Backers.
Didn't know that.
Which I am probably about to watch.
Yeah. Granted, the dude who did that has like a billion different synonyms, so.
So he's probably written every anime at some point.
Probably. Yeah. So, let's see, really nothing else, just really anticipating The Last Guardian. I got my new issue of Game Informer in the mail the other day, and they've got where one of the editors, you know, had his sort of demo playthrough, and he apparently He absolutely loved what he saw. So,
what's the street date for that game again?
December 3rd.
December 3rd. Got it.
Third or fourth one.
It
those.
Is hanging on to 2016 for dear life.
Yeah.
And also, just a side note, the much-anticipated Final Fantasy 15 will be coming out in a few days earlier. And there's just complete silence.
we couldn't have planned that any better.
Take notes, Square. All right, Chris, what are you doing?
So while waiting for PlayStation VR, I've been playing some other stuff. Forza Horizon 3. I am getting tired of the non-racing stuff, so I need to stop with that. It's just bumming me out. Because they have lots of collectibles and things to do, like drive on all the streets.
Yeah.
And
oh yeah,
488 streets. I got 486. And now it's impossible to find whatever two are missing.
Yeah.
They're probably alleys.
I believe I've gotten all of them, but somewhere it probably glitched. Shows the road is fully pink or gray or white. And it's impossible for me to figure it out because they don't have any way of saying, hey, here's the ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe if I pay $3 for their treasure map, and I'm not going to do that. That's just a really shitty way to fuck people over. Just saying, hey, if you want to get the easy way to find everything, you can pay us money. Instead of just being like every other open world, it's like, here's where all the shit is. You can go do it.
Yeah.
I'd rather have a burger.
Yeah, so I need to just say screw that stuff and just go to the racing.
Yeah.
Instead of worrying about when it's like, oh, you got a new barn find. Yeah. While you're waiting for... Or you're not ignoring that barn plan, we got another one for you. Just go away. Yeah. I just need to start doing the races.
Yeah.
That's when it's actually really fun. I'm also playing Rise of the Tomb Raider. Now it's out on PS4. Specifically to check out the PSVR stuff that is in that, but you have to actually play probably a good 30, 40 minutes until you get to the first... bonfire. And
it's not too bad.
It's pretty good. It's like the first one. They keep beating the crap out of Laura, hoping you care about her. Because that's a good way to care about a character, just beat the crap out of them until you feel bad for them. With this version, they give you a bunch of card packs. And the first one I opened up was the 20th anniversary pack, which included a bunch of costumes, like retro-inspired costumes, so like stuff from the first few games. There's like two for Angel of Darkness. Like, you guys should probably just forget that game ever existed.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So I haven't gotten to the point where I can actually see what the hell I'm supposed to do with that stuff, but... Yeah, I got a trophy out of it already. It's just all the packs they give you. It's like, get 150 cards.
Yeah.
I did that without even playing the game. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, there's lots of like side modes and such.
Yeah.
It's kind of confusing trying to get a grip on what all of them are. Hmm. There's like some that are like survival. There's like an endurance thing. Hmm. Streaming stuff. Hmm. It's like, I just want to play the damn game.
Yeah. Personally, I think the whole collectible card side mode in games these days just needs to go away. So everybody's doing it.
And it's boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if it was mainly just to add stuff to your, to like the single player stuff, like costumes and things like that.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, plus 20 ammo. It's like, what? I don't care about any of this.
Yeah.
So I think I'm at the point where I can actually start doing the VR stuff, so I'm looking forward to checking that out and doing some videos for it. Also been playing Hitman, playing their most recent episode, which takes place in Colorado. That's is a really cool scenario. It's a farm that's been taken over by a militia that's essentially kind of training and doing whatever their militia stuff do.
It's one of those groups.
Yeah, and there's four
social
people you gotta
commentary.
Take out. Yeah. There's four people you have to take out, so that's way different than the others, which usually have maybe two at most.
Hmm.
And as soon as you get into this, onto this compound, it's all hostile. There's no safe spaces.
Hmm.
So you constantly have to keep an eye out on other people and try and take down whatever targets you can to get better outfits.
Hmm.
So you can buy yourself
Is there any way where you can have the option to mail them like a box full of dildos and lube?
Oh my god.
Maybe in the next update.
And then maybe they'll get so triggered they'll shoot themselves.
That seems so specific. I'm kind of bothered.
I don't know where this is coming from.
One of the guys has a big OCD streak. You can kind of mess with his office and then cause him to go nuts and kill him after that. Knocking people out, taking their clothes, and watching what they do when they get out of it.
Slow down there, Trump.
He's like, what the hell's going on? Just running through the camp trying to get some more clothes. And I found there's some cool side stuff in this. I found a couple guys playing or watching games. And on the game was on the TV was Kane and Lynch 2.
Oh my god.
So it's like
that's fucking good
ass. Stuff like that. I believe there's like Trump reference somewhere. If you find the right people talking. And there are other people that are talking about some of the cool YouTube videos. I believe one from Achievement Hunter is mentioned in there. About this guy that just electrocuted like 80 people. Because there's like usually you can find like a puddle of water with a surge protector in it. If you have a screwdriver, I think you can sort of unprotect it and turn on the right switches to cause this like puddle of water that just electrocutes people as they go. And so he essentially got it so that people just keep seeing the dead bodies like, oh my god, go check on it, and they get electrocuted over and over again. It's some of those fun, weird, quirky things that is great about this game.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun. They got their new final episode for the season coming out in 2 weeks on Halloween. So I'm looking forward to playing that. That one's in Japan.
Yeah.
And, really good stuff. And, I've also been playing some PlayStation VR. We'll be talking about that in a little bit. So, how about you, Dan Reb? What you been doing?
Yeah, the first part of the week, it's really just been PlayStation VR prep. But I've also been playing some Overwatch. They added a whole bunch of Halloween stuff that we'll talk about in a little bit, so I'll go ahead and skip that for a bit. But for the most part, aside from Overwatch and VR, I haven't been doing or playing much. I just got a job at Glue Mobile, so... Yeah, I'm finally in the gaming industry, so it's been fun. It's the first week, so I'm still learning stuff.
Yeah.
Not much here. How about you, Teresa?
I've been gearing up for the 20th and playing obscene amounts of Civilization. So,
isn't that usually the norm?
Now she has a reason.
Yeah.
Well, I can't really play anything else. I need to play something one-handed. Because I have tennis elbow from playing too much Pokemon Go. I don't.
Wow.
Yeah. I there's
I feel like
nothing.
That's not tennis.
I wish I could say it some other way. But yeah, it's, so I'm doing everything left-handed.
You're supposed to be swiping to catch him, not throwing the phone.
Yeah.
Are you doing the spin the ball thing?
I am doing the spin. And
that's probably what.
Yeah, and I'm also walking around constantly with this phone in one hand in a very set position.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like you're walking, you know, with a platter or something. I don't know.
Do you still have the AR on, or do you turn that off?
No, I turned it off.
There you go.
Unless I catch a, you know, unless I really want to get a picture of a nice one that I haven't caught before, then I'll turn it on, take my picture, and yeah, that thing's got to stay off. So, yeah, I've been playing Civ Revolution 2 again on mobile, and Civ 5, I'm almost sad that Civ 6 is coming out, because I feel like I still, 738 hours in, I'm still not done with Civ 5. And I feel like once 6 is out, I may not go back and play. So it's a little bittersweet. But yeah, that's what I've been up to. And Lee, are you up next?
Yeah, I've been playing Forza Horizon 3. I've actually had the other Forzas. We have Horizon 2, which I never I actually got due to Pat's recommendation, but I never actually played it. And then my kids started playing it, so I watched him, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And I don't know. I guess I had to be in a certain mindset to play certain games. And so I just, you know, kind of never got into it. And then I don't know what happened. I don't know why 3 ended up being a thing for me, where I was like, okay, you know what? This is going to be the one. This is what I'm going to play. But I think it was seeing the Lambo, the Centenario on there.
Yeah.
I've always loved Lamborghinis since I was a kid. And I was like, okay, well, there's only like 20 of these in the world. So let me check this out. And we did the demo, and I was just, you know, even some of it just like, oh, you know, hey, boss, you're running things and blah, blah, blah. You know, put some shrimp on the Barbie. And none of that did anything for me. But I played the demo and just had like this intense sense of joy, like speeding down these roads and flying through this water and all that stuff, where I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to check this out. And so we picked it up, and I've been playing it just nonstop. I've been doing, I think the thing that finally hooked me was the art. So I've been like trying to design cars with my kid and stuff like that. We actually got a GMC van from the 80s, and we got the Mystery Machine from Scooby-Doo. Nice. And we have been street racing with it and winning. And it's also funny too, because then I see you guys like in the game, like, you know, Pat's got a Drivatar, Phil does. I don't even think some of y'all even play the game, but I'm like, oh yeah, there's Pat. And, you know, so I don't know. It's been a cool experience. I've been really enjoying it.
Yeah,
that was what I was pushing Forza Horizon 2 so much on, was that awesome use of Drivatars, where it just gets a bunch of your friends and it feels like you're road tripping across whatever the setting happens to be in any given game with a bunch of your friends. And that added quite a bit to the experience.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. I definitely, you know, you guys have heard me many times. I don't buy games on release. It's just, I always wait for the sale. I always wait for something, you know, and this is one of those, because it always kind of feels like no matter what I do, there's some, like, I think my experience has been a little bit different than what Chris was saying, because I don't mind just wandering around the world and just, like, you know, I ended up tearing ass across some crops one day and got like 3 skill points because I was drifting through some guy's banana field in my GTR. And, you know, like, so I like the
driving,
I like
sideways the, pays off.
It does. I really like the open world aspect of it, in which I can go somewhere and I can just kind of do whatever. I can just drive around if I want to have a good time, or you know, if I want to be very, you know, strict in what I'm doing. Like, my kid really likes doing the street races. I'm more about like exploring the stuff. So, and you know, the art scene in that game and just some of the stuff that people put in it is just crazy. So I've been doing that. I've been playing Fallout New Vegas, but that kind of got backburnered because of Forza. And I think also, like, in Fallout, I don't know if I have, again, I don't talk to a lot of people that have played this, but I'm at this part where it feels like a good chunk of the game has devolved into you run into this group of people and then they give you like fetch quests, or they want you to go check this out. And while that's cool, like that really wasn't something I experienced in previous Fallout game, or at least Fallout 3. It is, you know, it is something that's kind of left over from Fallout 1 and 2. And, you know, I've enjoyed the nuance because it's not, you know, it's not here's the good guys, here's the bad guys. It's definitely a little bit, you know, deeper than that. But I have gotten a little bit bored of, all right, I need you to go fetch this. oh, will you go look at this, and will you go do this? And so I'm on a little break to just drive around and hit people in Forza and try to get skill chains. So I've been doing that, and then, of course, you know, Legion, as usual. We just cleared the we cleared the first raid like 2 weeks ago, and so we're trying to get it on farm status. So other than that, I haven't been doing much. But, yeah, Forza has definitely been the surprise of the year for me. I have thoroughly enjoyed that. So, and speaking of which, some of y'all need to get that because we need to race.
Yeah. I'll probably pick it up Black Friday because that's coming up soon.
Yeah, what I ended up doing is I got an Xbox One S. And so we're keeping the old Xbox. And I'm going to put it upstairs for my kids. So I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to wait for Black Friday, and then I'm going to get him his own copy. And so we can do, he's got 4-player co-op as well. So I'm looking at doing that with him. So.
For me, it'll probably depend on just how my whole job situation goes.
Yeah.
But if I got people like, in my circle really getting into Forza Horizon 3, then I might consider picking it up.
Yeah.
After all.
Well, I really do have to give him credit, because I think what's interesting, because I've played the other Forzas, I haven't played Horizon until now. And I think it's such an interesting idea to basically have one world kind of be like a Burnout Paradise style game, and then the other one like strictly like hardcore racing. I think that's a really unique way to go about things, because you're casting the net wider. You have a bunch of people like, because I'm not into technical racing games anymore. I got that out of my system with the Gran Turismo games, and you know, I want to pick up something and just have a good time, and so that's been really fun. And just plus seeing all the just the amount of cars. I mean, like I said, we got a GMC van. And it is the mystery machine. I also have a paint scheme for it to turn it into the A-Team van. Like, it doesn't get better than that. No. You know? I also got one that was like El Cheapo Burrito van. And then we got some of the stuff that you could find. Like, one was the America Mobile, and it's got like Jesus and an American flag and all kinds of stuff on it.
Yeah, if you want a lot of people downloading your stuff, you just put an American flag on your car. That gets rated highly.
Yeah. So I guess we'll get it to PlayStation VR then, since Chris and Dandra both have it.
Yep.
Yeah, so like, what's initial thoughts? So I know you guys haven't had a heck of a lot of time to, you know, play with it quite yet, but what are you thinking so far, Dan?
I guess I'll go ahead and go first. So, I actually picked mine up at the night before launch day. What, it came out on the 13th, right? 14th?
Yeah.
13th.
But yeah, I got mine at GameStop since I had so much credit. And yeah, so when I brought it home, I was like, yeah, I already have some Move stuff, I think. So I looked into my crates and I was like, oh shit, I think I probably sold them all. So I didn't end up installing it that night. I ended up installing it a couple nights later because of some work stuff. And you know what? Setup is easy, but it's also a bit time-consuming because you have to figure out where you want to put everything. And I'm the type of person who will at times move my PS4 upstairs, downstairs, depending on how I'm feeling. And yeah, I don't think there's a really nice way to set everything up. It's going to be a mess of cords, and that's one buyer beware thing I have to mention. Aside from that, as someone that's actually had a chance with the PlayStation VR before release, they actually really improved the headset. I remember when I first played it, sweat was a huge problem. Now I wouldn't say it's fixed, but it's the helmet is a whole lot more comfortable now. You can adjust it in different ways. You can have the actual screen, if you will, or visor moved out or in, depending on your comfort level. And the rubber inside actually makes it comfortable to put on even when you have glasses on. So yeah, that's pretty cool.
I was going to ask.
I would say that's good. That's good to know, because, yeah, I wear glasses too. And that's, God, I hate some headphones just because of how tight they'll hit my head or whatever. Just because of glasses. So that's cool to know.
Yeah, there's a nice hole on the bottom of it where you can actually stick your finger up to push your glasses back on your bridge of your nose. Yeah. So that's
actually,
like how
actually
much
the nose part is pretty cool too. Again, like it's sort of a rubbery material, so you know if sweat goes on it, it'll be easy to clean up. The main part that kind of concerns me is where the visor is. Like, if you're to wipe it, I wouldn't know what to wipe it with. You know, just because in case things get foggy. But aside from that, I haven't really had any problems in regards to actual gameplay. The main thing, of course, is with games like these, you have to make sure you have a lot of space to play in. So be aware of that. I didn't really have any problems with motion sickness, but I guess the sample of games I've played weren't really all that diverse yet.
So what have you played, Danrib?
The coolest things were actually all in the demo disc that the package comes with. And the ones that I've had the most fun with are Job Simulator, which I plan on buying, even though it's a little expensive, as well as, what was the other one? You're actually just building towers of blocks.
Tumble VR.
Yeah. It seems really stupid and boring, but that's really a good indication of the physics engine that all these games use. So it's pretty cool. I didn't have as much fun watching the movies because I figured, you know, you could just watch a Pixar movie. But
yeah.
As for the games I actually bought, I bought Until Dawn, Rush of Blood, which is pretty much just like Disneyland rides with guns and knives and things that'll kill you and scare you. As well as Batman, which is Batman Arkham VR, which is pretty interesting. It's not as action involved as the other Arkham games. If I were to really compare it to something, it would probably be, I guess, a first person Telltale game. And I'm into those, so yeah.
It's supposed to be kind of like the detective parts of Batman.
Yeah.
So it's just solely focused on that stuff. What I saw of the game, the way you get around is pretty fun and funny. As you shoot like the grappling hook, and he just goes zipping across to the other place.
Yeah, that's pretty much how you go from place to place, which I pretty much found weird. The cool thing happens in the very beginning of the game where you actually put the suit on, and you look at yourself in the mirror. So when you have your move controllers, you can just, you know, do punching motions. I was just dancing in front of the mirror, just making Batman look stupid. And I thought that was awesome.
I'm Batman.
Batman. Yeah, I was doing that all the time, but his mouth wasn't moving. So I was like, damn it, can't track that.
I'm Batman. Okay, so let's see. What if I play? I'm trying to find the list I wrote earlier. But I played 100-foot robot golf. That's fun and silly. The McElroy brothers are the commentators in that, so there's even more silliness. I play Hatsune Miku VR Future Live, which is a VR Hatsune Miku concert, which is actually kind of fun. It's really dumb in that, like, you're sitting here, but then I figured out as you do better with the rhythm parts of the game, where you're kind of asked to sort of at certain times just shake your controller, which has a glow stick attached to it, trying to shake that with the timing that you see the rest of the crowd doing. And as you do better, you get other forms of wands. So the second time I put up a video for this on our YouTube channel, I'll be going up on the site a little bit, where it turns into a leek stalk. So I got this stupid vegetable. I'm like looking over like, what the hell is this? And I try and hit people in the crowd with it, all that sort of stuff.
Mathematically, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is like, oh, I'm turning into a Pokemon here. Then eventually turn into like a heart wand, which makes like a noise every time you shake it. So it's like a weird little thing. I was trying to hit people with that as well. And it also asks you to yell or talk, make noise in the microphone at times, where she asks like, how's everybody doing? It's like, fuck you. In the video, I figure out that you can actually hit triangle to go into a weird, like, sky seat. Like, you're sitting up above. But if you look around, it's like a smallish stadium setting all around the stage. You can sort of move around with the D-pad, sort of move up closer, further away, even get up on stage. But you have no body in the game, so just sort of this person just staring at her on the stage, which is like just real creep factor, but it's kind of... Yeah, that's a... Yeah, that's a free thing. You can get a demo with one song in it. $15 for seven, for a pack of seven for the first stage. And I think $15 for the next, each of the next two packs. So a little bit pricey, but it's pretty fun if that's what you wanna do.
Yeah.
I've also played Res Infinite.
Okay.
That game just envelops you.
Yes.
I had not played Res before outside of a demo for the PS2, so I had forgotten a little bit about what it was, but yeah, once you jump into it, that game is easy as hell, because that game is designed around using an analog stick to aim.
Yeah.
And now you use your head.
Yeah.
So you've got essentially like mouse or even better than mouse controls.
Yeah, you just kind of look.
Just kind of look, and you can sweep across. Yeah. Like, so... You know, if I had an outside shot, I'd probably look like a crazy person shaking my head around.
Of course, Res as a game isn't really about the gameplay. It's about the...
Experience.
The overall experience.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's been real easy. Like, the whole idea of just leveling up your, like, synchronization. It's like, oh, I killed five guys, now I level up to the next thing. It's like, that wasn't hard.
Res is basically what it's like to be on acid without actually having to take any drugs.
That might actually be Thumper.
Because
there's like a weird Cthulhu element to that. You kind of face bosses, and what I've seen of it looks real crazy.
Yeah.
That's something I definitely want to get, but I have enough right now to keep me occupied for a good bit. I've also played Volume Coda, which is a cool little way of playing more of that volume, which is, if you don't know, it's essentially a stealth game stylized after Metal Gear Solid's VR missions.
Yep.
And so with this, the whole conceit is you're sitting in this room, sort of like a hacker room apartment thing, and you can essentially like have like a holographic projection of whatever reason you're doing stealth to like hack people or something like that. But you can sort of play these levels. There are like 30 new ones that comes with this update. It's a free update for the base game, so you can play all the original levels in that same way and play the new ones. It's pretty fun. What else did I play? Super Hypercube.
Yeah,
that game is really awesome. And it does some really cool stuff. I really like the settings in it where you can actually like turn down the light bloom.
Yeah.
It, like, it's blown out quite a bit. And I wasn't really feeling too great this morning, so I was like, I'll turn that down, turn down the brightness a little bit. So it's not just trying to explode my eyeballs.
Yeah.
And yeah, that game's real fun. It's like hole in the wall, but Tetris.
Yeah.
A little bit of Tetris. Mm. Essentially, like, you start off with, like, one block. You hit X, zooms right through the wall in the wall. Then it, depending on how well you do with each stage, it'll be like, oh, plus one for completing that, or plus one for completing it, plus one for fast. And I had two blocks. And then all of a sudden you have to sort of actually look around, because the wall is in the background. And you have to look around your pieces to see what the hole is. And try and figure out, okay, I got to move it this way and fit it through the hole. And as you do it, it keeps adding. And with each new block, it's an extra point you get. So essentially, I think the last one, my best run, was a point where I had 68 blocks on my piece.
Oof.
And so as it's adding blocks, the trick I've been doing is spinning my blocks wildly, so it just adds to it. Try and create like unique things to it, so it makes it easier to say, okay, I think I remember how to get to that formation, that sort of thing. Yeah, it's just the one mode. It's real simple, but it's really fun. I'm looking forward to put more time into that as sort of probably a good way to just say, hey, I want to play for, you know, 15 minutes. I'll do this. Yeah, and that's from Polytron in Kokimori, which is obviously Philfish sort of after the whole Gamergate stuff kind of said, you know what, I'm out. And this is why he came back. Saw the VR stuff and sort of said, okay, I got an idea for something new. So this was something they've been working on since 2008, so had good reason to come back and finish this thing. So I think that was originally supposed to be a WiiWare game, where essentially like you somehow attach the Wii remote to your head. So you were kind of like looking around that way.
Yeah.
Like when people figured out you could kind of do face tracking that way. Or head tracking.
Yeah.
What if I played? I did a little bit of the video apps that are on there. They all suck. Two of them are solo res. I was watching an SNL skit and you couldn't even see Will Ferrell's face when he was doing Jeopardy. I just saw the dark pixels that were his mustache.
Yeah.
But it was fun in the sense that you could see like all the behind the scenes stuff that you obviously don't see on the on screen. But it was bad otherwise. And I was doing some in the one that has decent resolution. I forget what it's called now. I deleted it. But it was so just so low res, or it was better than the others, but it was low res enough that I was just kind of getting a little bit nauseous.
Because
it's just like this doesn't compare at all to like the games where that stuff is at least decently high production. This stuff is all just crappy and it starts grating on my nerves.
Yeah.
I just said, screw this, I'm just going to delete it.
Yeah.
And just wash my hands of that stuff. The other game I played was Drive Club VR.
Okay.
And that is the game that made me really nauseous. Yeah. mostly because, you know, I drive every weekday. I know about the forces and all that when you're driving. And driving like 120 miles an hour, having none of that, it hit me real hard. Not enough to vomit or anything like that, but I was feeling fine, and just this cold sensation just washes over my body. It's like, oh, this is not going well. If you watch the video, you can probably see the point where I just stopped looking around at nearly as much as I did before.
Oh, man.
And then I'm still suffering effects from that. So yeah, if I'm a little bit loopy, that's a little bit why. I tried to get a good night's sleep to help out, and it helped a bit. But yeah, man, I was... Oof.
Yeah.
What that game does real well is that there's a lot of customization in the cockpit view. So you get into the car, and if you watch the video... You'll see me like, oh, this is not how a car should look. Because it's like, because you're messing with the seat adjustments.
Yeah.
So move it back and forth, up and down. And it's like, I'm just sitting real low in this car and like right up against the steering wheel. It's like, that's not how it should be.
That was so my big problem with the original Drive Club. The cockpit view was just way too in.
So I moved it back. I have long legs, so I do that anyway in my car. Move myself up a bit so I can see a bit better, but I was having fun just like looking, sticking my head through the back of the car, like, oh, there's this thing on the back of the cars. I've always wanted to drive one that has like a, I don't know what it is, like a something from the engine. It's like, I'll just stick my head back there and look at it like through the seats, all that sort of stuff. But it was real cool just like turning around, like knowing that the back of my computer chair is there and seeing the car chair, the car seat. It's like, this is fucking awesome. Like, that's my fucking computer chair, and there's the car seat right there. And once you get it right, it feels real nice. It's just that lack of sensation of driving is not really there. I did a drift event. I went third person in that. It's like, I can't do drift anyway in first person. So I did that. It was fine. I sucked, but it's pretty good. It's a game that I might have to just stick to like one or two races in a session.
Yeah.
And quit out, not because that was my third race where that sensation hit.
Hmm.
It's like, oh, I gotta get out. I gotta go to third person view real quick. Finish this. See what else I can do.
Yeah.
And then the rush of making this work in VR, sort of hitting 60 frames per second, because that game is original is 30.
Yeah.
The game is real blurry.
Yeah, I noticed that in the video. I thought it was. I thought it was your video capture, but then you mentioned that you were seeing it that way personally. So it was like, wow. Yeah.
It reminded me of what it might be like if I drove without my glasses on.
Yeah.
Which I'm not legally allowed to. So it's like real crazy.
Mm.
So it was like, yeah, that's okay. You're not really looking in the environment so much as just looking at the road, seeing what's coming up.
Yeah.
Because I was like looking at the grass, because when you finish a race, you're kind of sitting on the grass on the side of the road.
Mm.
It's like, this grass looks not good, but it doesn't really matter because I'm not going to see this anyway. It also has like a cruise mode, cruise drive. Well, it's not actually like cruise control. That's what it would be nice if you could just say, hey, just go, I'll steer. But you can just sort of drive around a track, no racing limits or anything. Just go look and do stuff, which is cool. The replays are freaky as hell if you watch the video. Because you sit in the driver's seat and there's just this avatar sitting in your seat. It's like, I just did that. It's like, you see his head jerking around, turning things. Like, okay, this guy's just creeping me out because it obviously doesn't look like a real person.
Yeah.
But that's a real cool way of doing replay. Is that you can sort of sit in the side seat, not necessarily having to endure all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a cool thing for VR. Just like, okay, you go do something. I'll see what's going on.
Yeah.
Just messing around. I got that for $20, having bought the season pass on the original. So that was, it's a pretty good price for it. $40 might be a little bit much. But they added a whole new series of tracks in Scotland, I think it was, that it includes some city tracks. So for people that were wanting that stuff, that's there. I really like PSVR so far. You know, I've barely done much. Sort of played a handful of games. Tried to play them as best I can. So when we get reviews going, we definitely have to put up something of to just align any sort of nausea stuff. Just give people a heads up saying, hey, this might not happen to you, but if it does, you know, keep an eye out for this stuff.
Yeah.
So you guys have mentioned needing ample room to play. How much content is there on the PlayStation VR where you've got the headset on, but you're just holding the controller?
There's a lot of
that's
it.
That's really everything I'd be in on.
Yeah, everything I've played has been with the controller sitting down.
Cool. Same here.
You need to be able to at least, you know, kind of turn your chair around at most, you know?
Yeah, I think you should have, like, your wingspan's worth of room.
Yeah, at least. if you're gonna use the Move controllers, you need that at least.
Yeah, if you watch the Hatsune Miku, I smack my controller on the desk sitting next to me because I forgot that was there. I was trying to hit somebody in the face with the leak, so I paid the price for that.
Yeah.
The headset itself is really good. being somebody who just got off cold, the rubber things sort of hanging on your nose or like right above it really messes with me.
Yeah.
Because it kind of makes me think my nose is real stuffed up.
Yeah.
Mm.
Just constantly some like just sniffing like what the hell. And also makes me think my glasses keep falling down even if they're not. So a little bit weird stuff that's just particular to my own situation. I need to get new glasses anyway, so these ones are a little bit old and they slide down a little bit more easily. So far it's really good. The launch lineup is huge, pretty varied, and a lot of good stuff there. Just with like Super Hypercube and Res, and seems like Thumper is probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Chris, out of what you've played, what do you think is the best experience so far?
Let's see. I think Res and Super Hypercube are the two that are envelop you in sort of an experience, a visual experience, while not necessarily having to overwhelm you in the way that like Drive Club does when you're sort of looking around and I guess like the whole visual experience of Drive Club is the thing that overwhelmed me and got to me for nausea's sake.
Yeah.
Whereas with Res and Super Hypercube, it was more just, holy crap, I just did all that.
Mm.
Like, that the feeling of smashing your blocks into the wall the wrong way as you fail, it's like, ah, crap. With Res, I got to the end, it's like, whew, I'm tired after experiencing all of that. That's where it's
Is it just sensory overload?
A little bit. It's also just like you get tensed up.
Yeah.
You're like, I got to take this boss out. And he's throwing stuff in these different directions. I got to take these things out. I got the first two stages done.
Hmm.
So that second one where you got like these tentacle things shooting at you, they're trying to take them out quickly.
Yeah.
It's irritating. It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's easier with the headset.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get to Area X so I can actually do the video.
Yeah.
Which you have to either play an hour or beat the five levels.
Hmm. Whichever comes first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So on but the whole... for those of you wondering if if taking the plunge to VR is worth it, just based on the experiences I guess Chris and I have had, nothing's been bad. But I wouldn't say that there's any sort of game or experience that makes you have to go out and buy one now.
So nothing to say. This is why I spent $500.
Exactly. I understand that this is probably the most affordable entry point to get into VR, but nothing is really genre defining yet. But over the next 6 months with Sony's pipeline. One game that I do have to mention that you really have to take a look at is Resident Evil 7. I never got a chance to, I don't even know if it's available, but the very first demo, I don't know if that was
I think it's still out. I don't think it works.
Yeah. It's not compatible with VR yet, but from what I've played, like, that was a totally amazing experience, and I don't even like Resident Evil.
Yeah, they have the kitchen demo.
They have kitchen, but you don't really do much. All you do is knock over a camera.
Yeah.
So,
but that's sort of the inspiration for RE7.
Yeah.
I would say the lineup is pretty good. If you're already looking to get it, it's probably a good idea to get it. But if you're looking for that thing, it's like, oh, I wasn't interested at this, but I saw this one thing. And it's changed my whole view. It's probably not there yet.
Yeah. For me, Eagle Flight and How We Soar are two that I'm really looking forward to.
Okay.
You know, in particular, some of the tricks that Eagle Flight uses to avoid nausea.
Okay.
So yeah, you'll have to, let me know about that if you ever try it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking the main thing is that a lot of the games that I want are digital only, so...
Yeah,
that's kind of why I haven't really taken that deep a plunge yet.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm. Yeah, we got the Star Trek catch a chair thing. It looks like it's going to be pretty cool.
Keep talking and nobody explodes, which I have played and is amazing.
And the way they accommodate the need for the book is that you have at least one person on the playing on the TV with the regular controller, and they can look through essentially like a PDA.
Yeah.
Or PDF version of the manual. There in front of them. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But not really that much different than any of the other versions out there.
No.
Farpoint is one I'm interested in seeing.
Yeah.
That's the sort of first-person shooter with the weird light gun peripheral they have. That looks like it could be really cool if they have... it seems like you're actually moving in the world. That's one of the big contention points right now as far as nausea is. A lot of people are avoiding that by just having you teleport around.
Yeah.
Which so far with my experience with Drive Club, yeah, moving around may not be the best, but I think you have to be smart about how you use it as well.
Yeah.
So if this is like a slower game, that might be good. But I don't know. Yeah. I haven't tried the Tomb Raider thing has the option of warping around or moving around. So I'm curious to try that out.
Yeah. It'll also be interesting to see how some of these games improve when you get your PlayStation Pro next month.
Yeah. I'll be interested in following those and see what gets updates for that and what doesn't.
Yeah. So, on the whole, PlayStation VR seems pretty solid. It's a little pricey to get into, but it doesn't seem bad. It seems like, VR is actually going to stick this time.
Yeah. I mean, I've taken calculated risks before. I'm just really, really hoping that this doesn't turn out to be another Kinect or Vita.
I think they have more invested in this. Because so far, I think the little bit we've seen it from sales is that Jim Ryan, who was running he was saying that they've already sold hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Which is a lot, considering I think people were suggesting Vive and Oculus had reached about 500,000 or so together.
Yeah.
Just through the Steam stat stuff. So if they can sort of at least match that alone, that pushes everybody up to 1 million.
Yeah.
It starts giving developers more reason to try things.
Yeah. So, exciting times.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I guess moving on, we were talking about Valve a little bit, and looks like they just announced native DualShock 4 support for Steam. About freaking time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Essentially treat it like the Steam controller where you can reconfigure things and share the control schemes and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, this is well overdue. Now that there are native drivers now for the DualShock 4, this doesn't surprise me too much, but it's a good thing to see them taking advantage of those.
Yeah, I was looking at the slideshow that this came with. And they definitely, seems like Valve is aware that people might want like a standalone version of that software for the controls and such for not only Steam controller, but DualShock 4 and probably other stuff.
Yeah.
So that you can actually have it work with non-Steam games.
Yeah.
Which would be huge, especially for people on emulators, GOG.
Yeah.
All these other services out there.
Yep. They should totally do it.
Yep.
Instead of having to use Motion Joy, which may or may not infect your computer with adware. Not that I'm better.
Yep.
Anyways. So, it's good news there. Other good news, Overwatch Halloween event is happening.
Oh my god. Yeah, I guess I'll go ahead and talk about this. Like they did with the Olympics, Overwatch is doing this little campaign for Overwatch players. In addition to having hundreds of skins available for all the heroes, they've also added another mode of play. It's called Junkenstein's Revenge. And basically, it's just a four-player co-op to just get rid of everybody you see on the screen. So there's an easy, medium, and hard mode. And basically, what you're doing is you're killing all these zombie robots. And you're also dealing with Dr. Junkenstein, who's actually just a Halloween version of Junkrat. Mm. And versions of, what's his name, Roadhog, Mercy, and I think that's it. But yeah,
Soldier 76.
Is he in there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's four people. Anna, Hanzo, Kree, Soldier.
So in that particular mode, you're limited to four characters. You can only use Hanzo, the
arrow McCree. Guy.
Anna, the healing sniper, Soldier 76, as well as what's his name, McCree, the gunslinger. Yep. So, you know, if you like other characters, you got to learn these guys because these are the only ones you can use. But yeah, it's pretty solid. I normally hate in-app purchases, which is funny because I work in the mobile gaming industry. But I've spent like $20 on loot boxes alone just so I can like get as many of these skins as I can.
Yeah, they show the animation for that, and that looks pretty good.
Mm.
It's like a jack-o'-lantern full of candy that explodes.
Yeah. Like, you have Reaper, and, like, he looks like a Grim Reaper, but instead of the Grim Reaper look, he has a jack-o'-lantern as his head instead. there's also Mercy, who's normally, like, a guardian angel, but instead she's a witch. Mm. Anna also has sort of a jack-o'-lantern head going on. So, yeah, the one that I'm really trying to get is Hanzo's demon skin, because it makes Hanzo look even more badass. He looks sort of like Akuma.
Hmm.
But, yeah, Overwatch.
It's good.
Really good.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that ends on November 1st, so
yeah,
you got a couple weeks to play it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And another Blizzard news, WoW producer. Tom Chilton is no longer running WoW. He's moved on to another project at Blizzard, it looks like.
Yeah, I'm actually really kind of weary of this, not because of Chilton, but because they're giving it to Hazakostas, and that guy's really good at raid design, but he comes off as like an asshole. I mean, just being straightforward, like if you look at a lot of the stuff you guys have heard me complain about, has been based on decisions he's made. Like, and what it, Chilton was very good at talking with the audience, whereas it seems like Hazakostas has this attitude of, okay, I understand you want it this way. Let me tell you why you're wrong. And he has been a big part of the reason why the game, like with the last expansion, went so hardcore into raiding and didn't have anything else. And so him taking over it really bothers me, because like the class design, like you got, I really haven't talked about it because I know a lot of y'all aren't big MMO players, but like the class design in WoW, with the exception of like two classes, has really suffered. And like, I remember actually, talking with some people that are, you know, big WoW heads. I'll never forget Hazakostas, the guy that's taking over for Chilton, came out because there are some classes that launched in Legion that are flat out broken. They do not work right at all. They're bottom of the DPS charts. They're not even fun. Like, and it just kind of makes you wonder, like, you guys went through a 7-month beta, you got all of this feedback and you didn't listen to a goddamn word anybody said. And then what they do is specifically with Hazakostas is they make these tuning passes, right? And it's almost like they're nerfing the wrong thing. Like, tanks used to do a ton of damage. And like in the traditional MMO space, you know, when you have the triangle where you have tanks, healers, and DPS, you don't expect tanks to do that much damage. But they fundamentally change the way tanks work, where you cleave everything. So if there's five people in front of you, you're hitting all five of them with just a basic ability, right? Oh. So that's going to make your DPS shoot through the roof. Well, instead of working on that, they just came out and said, okay, well, listen, guys, we understand that a whole bunch of classes aren't working right and all that, but, you know, we haven't quite got all the numbers that we want to see, so we can make an informed decision about what to change with all of these classes. That seems perfectly logical, right? The very next sentence he goes, after saying that they don't have enough numbers to make any kinds of tuning passes, he goes, and we're going to go ahead and reduce all the tank damage output by like 20%. And so it's like, so wait a minute. You don't have enough of the numbers and enough data and everything to actually make changes to fix every other class, but you're going to go ahead and nerf all the tanks just because? So you have data for one and not the other? Mm. And like, there's just there's been so much back and forth with them. Like there's a lot of, you know, Legion has been a success. Apparently they're up to like 10 million subscribers. But I think that's also because they focused on more than just raiding and putting a guy at the helm that's only been interested in raiding. And don't get me wrong, his raid design and his boss design is fantastic. The guy is obviously a genius, but if you watch interviews with him and everything else like that, I don't know if it's he seems socially awkward or whatever the case may be, but he is very like a very binary person. It seems very black or white, and like he can't seem to understand the mindset that the player's in, which Chilton could do. And so that really bothers me that he's going to be the director, because, you know, I love WoW, and they just finally sort of unfucked the direction it was going, and I'm worried they're going to, you know, go right down the path of fuckery again. But one of the things that is interesting, though, with what Chilton is doing, Chilton's been at Blizzard since like I think 2004.
Yeah.
So if you know, he's still staying with Blizzard, so he's not like Metzen or Pardo or anybody else that's left. So, you know, most likely he's going on to direct something else pretty big. The last time a big game director left was and moved on to another internal project was Jeff Kaplan, and that was what Titan was, and then eventually evolved into Overwatch. And, you know, Overwatch is fantastic. So, you know, Blizzard seems to be on kind of a streak with their IP. Of course, you know, if Chilton's just moving to become the game director or whatever of something else right now, we probably won't see it for another 15 years. But still, Chilton is a great director. So I think whatever he gets involved in will be pretty badass.
Yeah, what I've read, the new guy used to be a lawyer. So maybe that explains the way he handles things.
Yeah, it's really ironic. Yeah, that actually is probably true, because you just sit there and like, you just look at this guy's responses to some of the complaints that people have, like with hard data. And by the way, he wasn't just a lawyer, he was a defense lawyer. So I think a criminal defense lawyer, which makes it even better, because it's like, well, you know, we have your client on tape sticking the gun in somebody's face. That wasn't him. Like, if that was the way he defended people, then that's obviously the way he looks at game design.
Yeah. Well.
Final Fantasy 14. It's nice over here.
Well, that's the thing. I don't particularly have an issue with the way WoW plays. Like I said, I do not like what they did with the class design right now. But, you know, I'm so entrenched in it at this point. I mean, we have our guild, and you know, we're still raiding on Fridays, and we've cleared normal. We're moving on to heroic. Like, I still really enjoy huge parts of the game. But, you know, one of the things that they did is that they, I don't know if any of you guys really kept up, but they did this thing called an artifact weapon, which is basically sort of like a prestige mode, which you're basically, you have a skill tree on your weapon. And so you have to keep upgrading it and upgrading it and upgrading it. And it moves along at a really great pace up until, like, I think it's like level 14 on the weapon. And then it goes to like glacier speed. Yeah. And so, and it's not uniform. Like, basically what you're doing is you're moving down a skill tree to get a specific skill that would kind of change the way you play your character. Yeah. But so for some people that it might take 16 traits. For some people, it might take 22. For some people, it might take 20. So all of a sudden, to get to this next dragon, you either have a really really easy path, or you have a really tough path. And like, that's something else with my class, with the Death Knight. I've got to get like 22 points in to get that other dragon, and I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't. It's not worth running around and doing all like. And that's the crazy part, because all the stuff they've added into the world is a lot of fun to do, but you just kind of hit a point where you're like, okay, I'm just filling up a bar. And what I'm going to get for it is very incremental. Like, oh, I'll do 2% more damage. That's not remotely exciting. And what's funny about it is that for years, the WoW populace has been like, we should go back to skill trees. And everybody's like, and the Blizzard's team, the WoW team's response had been adding 1% damage to, you know, a talent is not exciting. And then so you know, then, but everybody's like, no, that's what we want back. So they put it back in the game in this way. And now the kind of response is, this isn't exciting. And I can't imagine there's not some people in Blizzard HQ that are like, yeah, motherfuckers, like, this is exactly what we were telling you. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
But good luck to the guy. Like I said, I think there's a bunch of rumors going around that they're thinking that he's heading up Diablo 4.
That's what I've heard, too.
Yeah.
And hopefully it comes out and doesn't need an entire overhaul before the game is playable.
Well, I think that's the other thing. I think Blizzard is really in a much better place, like where they've – I think a lot of the people that they had doing some of the overall designs just really didn't get it right. And Chilton's not one of those dudes. So, yeah, I mean, it is kind of amazing how – Blizzard has gone through these periods of just like almost upheaval, like where their player base is like, what the fuck are you guys doing? And, you know, now they seem so incredibly like averse to that now. Like Legion as a whole seemed to be really designed around the idea that people hated everything that Warlords was. And then you look at the Diablo 3 redesign and it was the complete antithesis of the way that the game itself actually came out. And so I think they're more concerned now with getting it right out of the gate, because, you know, I think WoW will probably continue to decline in sub numbers. It'll pop up every once in a while with every expansion like it has now. But their real bread and butter is going to try and be keeping people constantly engaged in their suite of games. So whether that's Overwatch, whether that's Hearthstone, you know, anything, StarCraft, Heroes of the Storm, you know, Diablo, WoW, like, you know those games are quality no matter what you're going to play. So if you just bounce around from those games in general, you know, they essentially have their own ecosystem.
Yeah.
And so I think they're really interested in keeping people there. So, but yeah, if he goes to Diablo 4, I think that'll be pretty awesome.
Yeah. We'll play it in 2019. Yeah.
Too much color.
Yeah, let's make everything brown again.
I thought that was such a shitty thing too. Like, it doesn't look. I get the whole idea of, like, you know, what the atmosphere should be like and things like that. But I think the other thing people miss too is that people work on these games, you know, and so they're not a lot. People aren't just going to sit there and go, "Oh, look, I drew the fucking 38th brown background today. This is wow. This is really fulfilling for me. I really like what I'm doing." No, like the variety, and I get the idea of it, but. You know, you can only have gloom and doom so much. Having something different, you know, even if it's just something that looks different, is a smart idea. Look at these. I don't know if any of you guys watch The Walking Dead. But, like, at this point, like, those guys are peddling misery. Like, you have to make a change at some point. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think that's kind of what the Blizzard team did, because when you look at Diablo's story, I mean, it goes dark, darker, darkest, darkestestest. And just keeps getting like crazier and crazier. So, you know, you can have a waterfall with some blue in it, and that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah, the sign of a good artist is being able to have something be colorful but still evoke an atmosphere of dread.
Yeah.
Despair.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then there's the unicorn level.
Which was a great response.
Which was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't mess with those unicorns, seriously.
I like the whole aesthetic of the idea too. Like, I don't know if you guys have seen Gears of War 4. Yeah. The game's bright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's one of the first things you notice.
Yeah, it's not gray and brown like the other games. Like, then that's where it comes in. You know, people don't want to make the same. It's just the artists themselves. Like I said, nobody's gonna be like, "Well, it's the 58th gray background I made." Come on, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess we'll move on to Nintendo. This year is Zelda's 30th anniversary in Japan.
Yep.
And they've kind of taken the wraps off the storage room and have been showing off some of the stuff they've gotten there.
Like old,
to say the least,
old Famicoms and Famicom disk systems.
It's all kinds of fun retro stuff.
I look at that and I'm like, I want one.
Yeah, they're all mint in box.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This guy's like, fuck it, I'll just open one up, put it together, let's play some Zelda.
Yeah. And it's amazing that the dry belt hasn't, like, turned into syrup at this point.
Yeah, they have a disc rider as well.
Mm, yeah.
They're showing that off. There.
Which I'm pretty sure was made by Intelligent Systems. Yeah, the same people who do Fire Emblem. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that well known, but Intelligent Systems, before they started making actual games, they were building, hardware for developers.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So a lot of cool stuff.
I wonder how many Wii U's we'll see here in 5 years.
I think Nintendo wants to get away from that system as quickly as possible at this point. They might have really good games for it, but it's a tainted brand at this point.
Yeah.
Looking at the Famicom with the disc system attached to it, puts Sega's whole 32X stuff to shame. Like, it's like a console is just transformed into something completely different.
Yeah. And by the way, you can tell that these are the original first edition Famicoms because the second player controller has the microphone in it.
Yep. Yeah, they're also hardwired in there, so it's like it's a 3-foot cord.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's back before anybody knew any different.
Yeah.
So. I bet
if this of course you're going to sit close to it.
Anyways. So, yeah, interesting tweet coming out of Rockstar this week. Apparently they're working on something. But is that really a surprise at this point? Of course they're going to
announce the game. Everyone knows it's coming.
It seems to involve the color red.
Yeah.
What could be involving red?
Yeah, I mean, really.
Table tennis VR.
It's obviously Diablo 4.
I mean, Red Dead Revolver just came out on PS4. Let that be a hint.
Yeah.
So
that's probably the next Red Dead game, which is great because I loved Red Dead Redemption and I want to play another Western game.
Yeah.
Of that quality.
Yeah. No, I'm sure they can't just do GTA all of the time. So.
Oh, they've been doing pretty good on that for 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll add horses to it.
I am wondering what particular time period this time they're going to be setting it in, because Red Dead Redemption was basically set like in the early 20th century, like right on the cusp of when that sort of whole part of the West was basically ending.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are cars in that.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, I don't know, maybe they could just do it really cool and just, like I've suggested a million times, set it during Reconstruction.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of...
After Red the Civil Dead, War.
Yeah, Red. That would probably be the best idea, because Red Dead was sort of like the last outlaw story, essentially.
Yeah.
So they certainly couldn't do it, like, after that, you know?
So you could tell. Now you can tell the first outlaw story.
During the Reconstruction era would actually be really pretty good, because since you're basically taking place in essentially the South, Reconstruction was a pretty bloody and chaotic time for the southern part of the U.S. after the Civil War ended. So you're having to deal with the Klan for one thing.
Yeah.
Northern carpetbaggers, and there were still major things going on with American Indians, which hopefully will be a bit more involved this time instead of just another soldier that you have to another enemy that you have to shoot for one mission like it was in the last game.
Yep. All right, so I'm kind of going to lump these next three together because they all kind of relate to each other. So, yeah, we got Atlas's Wada, who's saying Persona 5 Arena, definite possibility. Good news.
Mm-hmm.
Persona 4 Arena was actually very good, so
yeah, I didn't want to see him leave it with Ultimax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got a whole new cast there on Persona 5 that you can dip into, so yeah, it's good news there.
So we need the cast to breathe a little bit before they start making all the fan service stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why you're saying it's a possibility. It's a
definite possibility.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Definite possibility.
God damn it.
Not really confirming anything, but hey. Yeah. And the other bit of news that the other bit of news that we got is KOF 14 and Street Fighter V both getting arcade versions.
Yes. King of Fighters 14 getting a distinctive arcade version. Whether that means we're going to see new content added to it for that version, or if it's just going to be kind of like the Climax update for King of Fighters 13, which was just based on the console version, remains to be seen. But it is going to be part of the Nessica Live 2 system.
Yeah.
Which isn't really it's not an arcade board unto itself. It's just a
it's Steam a service for arcade games, and that's pretty close.
But it's going to be a big part of that. Yeah. Street Fighter V is coming to arcades in the form of the PC version.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense.
I'm guessing they'll probably strip the story mode out of there, because that doesn't make any sense to have in the arcade mode.
No. Mm.
I also find it...
not like they worked on it anyway.
No. Well, they did something that lasted 6 hours, but yeesh.
But to the point, getting into Japanese arcades is going to be an important step for Street Fighter V, and it'll be good for the community. So yeah. That's good news.
Yeah. So good stuff there.
But we'll be hearing more about the King of Fighters 14 Arcade Edition apparently in February.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, moving on to that, we got, if you want to play World of Final Fantasy. Patrick has turned into a robot.
Yeah, Pat just went to one of the zeros.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool, though.
There's a Patrick on Tuesday.
I was going to talk about
World of everyone Final else Fantasy. Cut out completely.
Yeah,
but yeah.
You're back now. So.
Oh, look, great! It wasn't me this time. Wonderful.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to play World of Final Fantasy, you get to play it a week early. I mean, it comes out 10/25, but you'll be able to play it a week ahead of time if you want to.
What do they mean by a week ahead of time? Like, is the full game or just a demo?
It's a demo.
Yeah, okay. Just a demo. So, should give you a good idea of whether if it's a game that you're actually going to want to spend some time on. So I'll probably download that and check it out.
Yeah, I mean, we're spending more time talking about this than, the other game that they're having.
Yeah. Well, it's cool. I mean, it's a cool concept, and it's got a really distinctive look. It's everything that we want Square to be doing.
ATD.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unlike ATD. What they're doing with our next story.
Yeah. So Final Fantasy VII Remake is officially ditching the ATB system. And of course,
apparently Tetsuya Nomura thinks it's dead.
Yeah, and he rationalizes that as to why.
Yeah, he really He didn't give reasons so much as saying "fuck the classic players."
Yeah, it's one of those things.
That's kind of been Nomura's mantra for a while now.
Yeah,
it kind of has been. Yeah, so given the episodic nature of this and the fact that it's going to have gameplay that I won't care about, like Patrick, I think we're both out on this.
Yeah, I'm not going to be a party to this.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it really shows the need at Square Enix at the moment to really develop more developer talent.
Yeah,
yeah, it needs new blood.
Yeah,
Yeah, Nomura is not supposed to be a game developer. He's doing this because the ranks are depleted.
Yeah.
And so I think as, and again, this comes back to Tokyo RPG Factory and hopefully bringing some developers up through that project. Yeah. Hopefully we'll see some more developers come up through Square Enix, and Nomura can just go back to being a character designer and environment
working
designer.
Working on like Kingdom Hearts. Put him back on Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be his thing anyway.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
He's actually good over there.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's his style, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to see what the remake is.
Go back to Kingdom Hearts 3. Go back to finishing up Kingdom Hearts 3 and then make more, start designing more custom-made figures.
Yeah.
For DC.
Oh, dear. Anyways.
So that I can buy them. What we're saying is we don't hate you, Nomura. We just hate what you do.
To our favorite games.
Yeah.
So anyways, we're going to move on to another little quick story here, which is kind of like the opposite of what we just talked about. So Final Fantasy XIV Stormblood announced. PS3 version of Final Fantasy XIV is closing. However, it's if you buy it, you're going to get the PS4 upgrade. So Square's actually doing good by you on this one.
This was something that they did shortly after the PS4 launch, because the PS3 and PS4 versions of Final Fantasy XIV were supposed to come out at the same time. Yeah, obviously, the later launch of the PS4 and a couple of other delays prevented that from happening. Eventually, we had a beta on the PS4 that led to, I think, an early 2014 launch. But they did they acknowledged it, before the game even released, said, if you buy the PS3 version now, we'll let you upgrade to the PS4 version for free when it comes out, which was awesome. That happened, and it was, I forget how long they were doing PS3 to PS4 upgrades.
I think they're probably still doing it.
They are?
I think.
So I thought they stopped doing them like maybe 6 months after the PS4 launch.
I don't know.
But yeah, it looks like they're going to be opening the door for that again soon. Mm-hmm. And Yoshida has even said that it's not out of the question that Final Fantasy XIV owners for the PS3 version who aren't even active subscribers might be allowed this upgrade.
So, they should, because they're not going to support the PS3 version anymore. I think at this point, dragging the PS3 version along is just going to be a problem. It's putting time and resources into a system that's fading. So, they may as well just focus on PS4.
Yeah, that's how I upgraded to the PS4 version. I bought the PS3 version when it was on sale for like $10 on PSN and didn't start it up or anything. And then when they announced
they
that
did an upgrade promo.
Yeah, for the launch, I did that. Which
and there he went.
Evolved. Oh, sorry. Downloading it, starting it up, having to at least start up the game. And then you're able to do, like, the upgrade.
Yeah.
It's like a weird, complicated process because it's all built on, what is it, like, 14-year-old software at this point with the original Final Fantasy XI stuff?
Mm. Oh, 14 doesn't use Play Online.
I had to go through that, though, with my account.
Weird.
That's how old my account is.
Yeah. You have to do a migration to the new system. And
it works, But yeah. I'm guessing this is also going to coincide with the PlayStation VR compatibility that's already been confirmed on the way.
Yeah.
So that'll be nice, too.
An MMO in VR is going to be very interesting to see how it ends up working.
That's going to be nice weaponizing MMOs even more than they already are.
Yeah.
It's kind of perfect because it's slow.
Yeah. So, good news on the Final Fantasy XIV front. Which
That'll be early summer.
Early summer?
Mm. Yep.
Yeah, the weird name, Stormblood. Yeah. You flip that around, it's Bloodstorm. Then you're getting into typical video game names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, the settings going to shift from Ishgard to Alamigo, which is something that fans have wanted for quite some time. Hmm. And it's a story arc that's been years in the making, so it'll be nice to finally see how they play it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they might have a red mage job.
Hmm. Level red increase. Mage and dancer, what they're speculating.
Yeah.
Isn't there a deluxe edition of Final Fantasy? No, wait, that's Final Fantasy 15. Sorry.
Yeah. They have a bundle of the base game and Heaven's Ward.
Yeah.
Like, it's called Final Fantasy 14 Online.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not descriptive
at all. Because
there's
no other way that you could play it, you know.
Well, that's just saying this is Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't another Final Fantasy 14 that was you guys refused to charge for...
If you put it on the box like that, then people will buy it expecting that it's going to be a regular Final Fantasy game.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to get home and it's an MMO, and then all aboard the Butthurt Express... It just isn't good for anybody.
Yeah. So, anyways. So let's finally move on to talk about 100 episodes of the Day Zero update.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So we did 100 of these things. Well, technically 101, because I actually lost one.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Close enough. So you want to start us off, Pat, just reflecting by...
Yeah, so this really goes back to our time at Game Addicts. Hmm. Because... Yep. Because when the Day Zero update was finally coming into fruition and everything, we were adding hosts to the mix. Like, one of the things that I had always kind of seen it as was a continuation of the work we were doing over at Game Addicts. So bringing in Lee and Teresa was kind of a no-brainer for me. And I thought it fit our particular voice as a podcast really well, and I've been absolutely thrilled with the results there. But it also goes back to something that we worked on, I think, back in 2007, you and I, Phil, called the Daikin Kai Project.
Yeah.
Which was,
the first episodes, actually, I think we did, may have done like 7 episodes or so.
Something like that.
Something like that. They're still on archive.org if you want to listen to them, but God, please don't.
No, we did kind of stink it up, and we didn't have the software backing, to be fair.
Yeah.
We didn't have the software that we have now to produce a good podcast. And so we were each individually recording our own sides of the conversation in our own Audacity instances. And then we had this poor bastard Jeremy Yerby as our producer who took all of these, or who took these two WAV files and spliced them together. And that was where we kind of found out that my laptop was recording a hair slower than your computer.
Yes.
And it wouldn't have been noticeable over maybe a 5 or 10 minute conversation, but when you're getting into an hour, 2 hour podcast, it starts to show.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a whole lot he could have done about that. So if you do go back and listen to those episodes, and please don't, for your own sake, what happens is that I will become more and more desynced throughout the episode, and it's just lag in one of its most horrible forms yet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
also
it was
keep
fun.
In mind that it was fun. I mean, we got our feet wet there, and
I think the content of the shows were good too.
Yeah. No, it was 2007. That was a pretty good year for gaming. So.
We talked D3 that year. No, you know, we only did a few episodes, but I think that we got some important ones in.
Yeah.
And so, when it didn't really quite work out because of the software limitations and things, Jeremy's life was kind of really picking up at that point. And hopefully he's listening. Shout out to Jeremy Yerby. He did great by us. He's also a former Smash Pad writer during the Inside Gamer Online era. Also a good time.
I would have called it Fiasco, but that's just
me. Fiasco. Oh my god.
But even though we kind of wrapped it up at one point, I always sort of had it in the back of my mind that we'd come back and do something like this again when, you know, when better software was available and better resources were there for us to put something together with.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we have.
And that led us into doing some Smash Pad live streams until we both realized that we can't talk and play games at the same time.
Yeah, those were interesting.
Yeah. So that eventually, I think some of those earlier beta streams are still on YouTube, so you could watch them.
In pieces.
Yeah. I think there's a few complete ones up there, too. So.
Yeah, and counting that we'd actually be coming up on the... Like, if you add the Smash Pad Live stuff to the Day Zero update, we would be hitting our 2-year anniversary next month.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And so after a few of those, we ended up deciding to actually just record these things, figured out how to do that, and this turned into the Day Zero update, which you're listening to now. Yep.
And then we got Brandon in the mix, and...
Brandon came on pretty early, I think.
Yeah, he was the first one we added, I think.
Yeah, yep. Didn't you come on, like...
I think you got... We were, like, on... Four. Yeah. I was basically added in because I made an appearance on another podcast, and, you know, Phil and me, we were already acquaintances through... other areas, and he just asked, you know, you want to join in on it? And I said, hell yeah, why not?
Yeah.
It was a good
decision. The world's everlasting regret.
Hardly.
No, you did great here. And, you know, and then over time, Danrib and Chris started filling in as needed, and we really came into our own. And. There were some growing pains, but I think we found a format that really works for us.
Yeah, and it's still evolving as these things always do.
Always will. I mean, you can always get better. And
I'm perfect. I don't know what you motherfuckers are talking about.
So what's the one thing that you guys have learned doing this for like 100 episodes or however many episodes you guys have happened to have been in here? What's the one thing that
Skype hates us?
Skype happens.
Skype happens. I mean, actually, I think we have a couple of episodes that are called Skype Happens.
A couple?
So, yeah.
Skype happens too. Skyping.
Yep.
Skype. I think... Skype happens 3. Skype's back.
Yeah.
I'd say it
a couple times today.
I'd say if anything, probably the thing that I have learned the most is that Phil and Pat are relentless. You guys don't miss the show. Like, I think Pat, you missed like what, 2?
I missed 1.
Yeah.
And it was because I was asleep at the computer. I woke up pretty much right as the show was wrapping up, and I felt terrible about it. And that was just a few weeks
you've
ago.
Died a few times filming this. So
yeah. Well, that was on. That was a few times on Let's Weekend. That's what I was falling asleep on. And usually it was passed out drunk, but, but Let's Weekend is a different beast altogether.
Yeah, it is. But no, just like kind of that relentless and just being so dedicated to it. Like it's my life is shaped a little bit differently than some of you guys. And I know Teresa's is the same where there's definitely times I like to participate, but there's other stuff going on. And then, not just Skype happens, but like life happens. Like, you know, I've had power outages and, you know, like, oh, now I'm at the doctor with my kid or ripped my toenail off and I got to go deal with that. Like, you know, just that kind of stuff. And no matter what else happens though, you guys are always around. I think Phil, you only did one where you didn't do it. And that was because you were moving.
I'm pretty sure the one that I didn't do was cause I was in the hospital. So,
well, it's the same thing really.
Yeah. The one that I was moving on, well, turns out I ended up getting internet before, so I ended up not missing that one.
Yeah.
But still, I try to be here because it's fun for me. If I get to hang out with you guys, talk about the news. Doesn't really matter to me how many people listen to it. It's just a lot of fun for me. I mean, when I started to do this, I was a lot shyer than I am now. You know, this has been a growing experience for me, and it's you know, now you can't get me to shut up. So, yeah.
I think it's been good for all of us.
It really does remind me of the Game Addict stuff, definitely.
Yeah. So how about you, Teresa? We haven't heard a lot from you in
one. That's because she's playing Civilization.
No, not playing, I swear. I've picked up wonderful little nuggets of things that you guys have dropped. Books that I wanted to read. anime, games, obviously, that, you know, I've picked up and played. You know, after listening to you guys talk about it, it's just, it's that sharing thing where, you know, we're trading our experiences, and I think we're all enriched by it. We all get something from it.
Yeah. So, that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a certain level of discourse as well. I mean, it's I think it's really difficult at times to, in a lot of ways, to be a fan that has opinions, because, or I guess really just the way the world is these days, having opinions on anything, because there's just always somebody out there who's willing to write it off or you know, just go, oh, well, fuck this or this, you know, taking whatever the case may be to the extreme. I mean, you know, even Chris and I have had some long-winded disagreements, but it never feels like the kind of discourse you really see on the internet where people are like, yeah, well, you're just a fucking idiot. Like,
yeah, it's not acrimony.
You know, and I think that's really important, because just like in anything else, I mean, you can have differences, you can have differences of opinions, and you know, those kinds of differences also are really what make, you know, a lot of these discussions interesting, because we're each coming at it from different angles, and like, oh, this is the way that I see it. This is what this means to me. And I think some of that stuff is really interesting, because I know for me, there are certain times where, you know, I'm very much in a particular mindset, and then we'll sit there and talk about some stuff, and it's like, I'll walk away and go, wow, you know, this wasn't an angle that I was thinking of. Whereas I don't really get that, I think, in a lot of the conversations that I have with other gamers. It seems very much like me too, and that doesn't really happen here.
Yeah,
we're not so much of an echo chamber. It's varied.
And I think that applies to life as well, just as a whole.
I mean, we all come from different walks of life, so, you know, we all take things differently. So that's part of the reason that I think we all have different views on things, because we're all coming at it from different perspectives.
And it makes a better show.
Yeah.
Yeah, not just assuming that, oh, you've got a different opinion, well, fuck you, you're wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways. Yeah. So a couple of the one thing I did want to bring up was the episodes that we've done with guests on the show, and I think those have been the most fun that I've had.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's always good hearing, you know, the opinion of somebody who's actually had their ups and downs in the industry, and at the same time, just having a different voice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why it's also important to me, like, when we have a guest on the show, that we just kind of go through the same thing, the same format with them, and getting their take on the news and everything else that's going on, because that it adds so much to the show. And
yeah, unless it's like a specific guest, like we had Tom Happ on, and we pretty much spent the entire show talking about Action Verge, because
I mean, it made sense. It was our game of the year. So.
Yeah.
We just need to get Dan Edelman on so we can pick on him like we did Tom Happ.
Yeah. We got he's got Chasm going on soon, and what's that other one that he's directing, marketing for? The name escapes me at the moment. I'll have to check it later. But yeah, I'm pretty sure we'll be able to get him
on. Australia. Hmm.
We'll eventually have him on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we've done E3. And
they're fun in their own way.
they're fun in their own way, but it's like those episodes are typically like the more rapid fire ones that we do because it's just off the cuff reactions of what we saw that
they're night. Absolute hell for Phil.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the hottest of hot takes.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, a couple of those you'll hear me just like deteriorate into a mumbling mess because I'm so tired of it by the end of them. But yeah, they're a lot of fun to do, and I think going forward we're probably going to continue to do them. That is, you know, if my living situation continues to permit it. Once I have, you know, a job and stuff, I might not have as much time.
Yeah.
But yeah, if all goes well, we'll still do them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the E3 stuff is important too because I think more so than any other time that I can really imagine. I think there's so much spin to what is being produced and what is being shown, and there's such a focus on these like vertical slices where it's like, you know, this is probably not what you're actually going to get. And, you know, I think especially having, you know, a group like us that have been looking at this stuff and writing about it and talking about it for so long. I mean, I remember going to E3s when they were here in Atlanta, you know, and so being able to kind of cut through some of that bullshit, because otherwise, you know, all you're doing is talking about a hype reel. And, and so I think that that's something that's really, really worth talking about. And especially now with everything sort of being like oversaturated with the amount of stuff where it's like, you know, you're going to see a Call of Duty, you know, you're going to see, you know, some sports games. And I think, you know, with some of the direction that we have here, we're able to start highlighting, you know, things that you might not see on some of the other websites. Like I remember when we did our last E3 thing, one of the things that I was looking forward to the most was a game that I didn't really see anybody talk about. And that was Aragami, which just recently came out. It's basically like the, kind of like the spiritual sequel to Tenchu, which I never thought I would see a game like that again. And I think I've seen maybe one website report on it, you know, besides us with us talking about it. So, you know, I think that's something else that it serves up too, because there's a lot out there. And, you know, I think part of it too is something that this podcast has done for me is sort of get me back into the idea of like, oh, well, let me go take a look at this thing. You know, this is actually really cool. Cause I don't have a lot of time, you know, these days to get into a lot of stuff. Like I like for what, Phil, or excuse me, what Pat was talking about with Forza, like it recreating this experience of, you know, going on like a road trip with your friends. That is what kind of had me go, okay, I'm going to check this out as opposed to, oh, it's got cool cars and pretty graphics, you know? And it's like, and then, so it was like, okay, road trip with friends and a Lamborghini. I'm fucking in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forza is an asshole simulator. Like, fuck you. I'm going to fuck up your driveway, your nice backyard. Just going to drive through it all. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have these, there's a couple of stories I've read recently of, couple of folks who have like run into their the drivatar of a friend of theirs that has passed on.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, it's kind of surreal to see that.
Yeah, I saw a story recently about somebody was trying to get their great aunt's, I think, passed away, and their bank account kept charging late fees and such. And they're trying to explain to these people that are in this bureaucracy system, like, this person's dead. They're not going to be able to pay any of this. Well, we're going to have to take it to collections. Like, who are you going to get this money from? This person's not alive anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we got this weird digital future that doesn't end when people pass away.
Yeah.
But back to what Lee was saying, I think that's one of the things that really sets us apart as a podcast, because You listen to some of the bigger ones out there, especially around E3 time. It's going to be, yeah, here's your Call of Duty, here's Madden, here's Battlefield, and everything else just kind of gets sucked up into the undertow. We, just by being who we are, kind of veer away from that and give that kind of coverage to games that otherwise might not get that kind of spotlight. And that's kind of the... That really, you know, fits into the model that I had in mind when we started doing this, and I'm just really happy to see it play out as well as it has. To all you guys, thank you for for helping that vision come to fruition, because obviously it couldn't happen without you guys. This podcast has evolved about as perfectly as I could have imagined it.
Yeah.
And it will continue to. I have every confidence that it will continue to, and really fit into that niche and really continue serving that kind of purpose, you know, in this massive field that is the podcasting world.
Yeah. We're carving out our niche. We're not for everybody, but there are definitely a lot of folks like us, and hopefully sooner or later they will find us. So
many of them already have.
So
with grassroots works.
Yeah. So with that in mind,
it takes time. It takes time. It takes effort, and it takes patience, but it pays off in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this Mashpad core has pretty much been around for over a decade now. We don't really appear to be slowing down. We do have some lulls, but when we're on it, we are on it. Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And I hope to continue being Mr. System Launch for years and years.
Yeah. Well, the only one you've got to look forward to right now is the NX. So,
and we'll be on that. So
yeah, we will be on it. Probably do some, I don't know, unboxings or whatever. Just throw stuff up there and see what sticks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So 100 episodes down, and many, many more to come.
Yep. So, all right. So with that, I'd like to remind you guys, if you're not subscribed to the show already, episode 100 would be a good one to subscribe on, and you can do so on iTunes, on TuneIn Radio, on Google Play, or your other favorite podcast aggregator. Also, throw us up a review, because those help a lot in getting the podcast noticed.
Raising our profile.
Yeah.
We talk about that a lot, so let us know.
Yeah. So, and with that, I'm Filippo D'Onofo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
I'm Dan Red Victoria.
I'm Teresa Sammons.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
Have a great week.